from West Virginia Public Broadcasting. Support for the legislature today is provided by AARP West Virginia, your ally for real possibilities in the Mountain State. Learn more at aarp.org/WV. The Charleston Gazette Mail, using its CGM app to deliver the latest news, traffic, and weather alerts, keeping you in the know while you're on the go. Lumos Networks, online at lumosnetworks.com. Marshall University, with more than 100 degree programs offered in 4 locations and online. More about the Marshall family at marshall.edu. Orion Strategies, professional public relations, government affairs, creative services, and research and polling, with offices in Charleston, Buchanan, Martinsburg, Pittsburgh, and Columbus.
Good evening and welcome to the Legislature Today from the Capitol Building in Charleston. Joining me right now, Brad McElhaney of West Virginia Metro News and Ryan Quinn from the Charleston Gazette Mail. Thank you both for joining me this evening. Right now, the Senate is taking a brief break. We've been listening all day to the amendments that are going through on Senate Bill 451, the amendments that are being proposed. This is the comprehensive education reform bill. Before we get into the specifics of the three that we've witnessed this afternoon, first, Brad, let's start with you. The extraordinary procedural path that this omnibus bill has taken this week.
Oh, it's been omnibus all the time. And if Ryan and I look to the viewers like we've been beaten about the head and our eyes are glazed, it's like we've been in the ocean just being beaten by the waves all week long. But I mean, it's been very interesting. As you may recall, last Friday when we left off, there was a long, dramatic Senate education meeting where this bill was passed out. And the next step was going to be Senate Finance. Everybody thought it's been recommended to go there. So we come in on Monday, and first the teachers unions had a press conference objecting to the bill, and we came upstairs, and when I came up, the Senate was in the act of saying, all right, we're gonna have a motion to go to the committee of the whole. And so I get out my dictionary and you know, what is this committee of the whole? And it turns out it's a rarity. There have been two or three in Senate history where the entire Senate acts as a committee. To some, this was to get around the Senate Finance Committee because the votes weren't there. To others, it was so everybody could hear testimony at once, hear the arguments, report back to their constituents. And so there we were in that committee of the whole in a marathon on Wednesday, and we haven't yet recovered.
Let me ask you, Ryan, then the governor weighed in on the committee of the whole and on the large bill itself. Tell us how the stance the governor took at the beginning of the week.
Well, the governor said that he was going to veto this bill in its current form, and he was asked about several pieces of the bill, seeing as the bill has numerous things in it. You know, pay raises that he promised before the election in November. It's got charter schools it would legalize in West Virginia, all sorts of stuff. And as he had before, he said, I'm opposed to charter schools. I'm opposed to education savings accounts, which are these homeschool, private school, online school vouchers, and said that he opposes this bill and doesn't want it to move through in its current phase.
Governor called it a food fight. Used words that were accustomed to the governor talking. Say, this is a food fight we didn't need to have.
Right. He was saying, this is a mess. This is divisive. There was no reason. And he repeatedly said he wasn't picking sides, that he felt the Republicans wanted education reform, that their motives were sincere, but putting everything together, he just couldn't see it. And he was pressed on, would he veto that bill. So today, there are 21 amendments that will be introduced. We've gotten through a few of them so far today. Let's go ahead and listen to the First Amendment, some of the debate around the First Amendment, which is about that non-severability clause, and then we'll come back and talk about that.
Yes, sir. Senators Palumbo, Baldwin, Beach, Facemeyer, Ehlenfeld, Hardesty, Jeffries, Lindsey, Plimal, Prezioso, Romano, Stallings, Unger, and Wolfel move to amend the bill on page 14 by striking out all of Section 5.
The senior senator from the 17th.
Thank you, Mr. President. I ask unanimous consent to explain the amendment in lieu of having it read.
Is there objection? Chair hears none. Senator may proceed.
Thank you, Mr. President. This amendment would propose to remove the non-severability clause in 18.1.5. I think during the discussion of this bill, we learned that this is a virtually unprecedented provision in state code. While counsel indicated that it was something that we had every right to do, just because we can do it doesn't mean we should do it. To me, if you're supportive of a lot of the provisions in this bill, there's no reason to throw the entire thing away just because one thing might be challenged. I think this is, quite honestly, as I said when we were discussing it, I think it's mean-spirited to have this in the bill. I think it's attempting to discourage any challenges to any portions of the bill that people may object to, and I think it should be removed.
So the non-severability clause crafted in this bill is designed to be a shield against the judiciary from picking off bits and pieces of what, during the course of the next several hours and perhaps the next several weeks with the House of Delegates, the next several hours or days in this chamber, what we work out as a compromise of all the competing considerations. That's why it makes sense, in my opinion, for there to be an anti or non-severability clause in this bill.
Why would you allow the court, by determining that one part of this bill, you know, isn't going to fly, the whole thing is dead, and salaries are one of the things we're trying to do to improve education. Wouldn't you agree with me that that would be certainly problematic and detrimental to teachers' morale to go in and say, yeah, we'll give you a 5% raise, now we're going to take it away through no fault of your own. But the court made this decision, you know, that one part of this bill wasn't legal, and we're going to wipe it all out. Don't you think that that is a direct interference of the court?
No, I don't think it's direct interference with the court at all. I think what it is what I precisely what I just said it was a moment ago. It's designed to act as a shield to court intervention into something that is within the legislative constitutional authority and sphere of authority. So I think its purpose is to dissuade intervention.
You know, this is a shield. It's a shield to try to stop anyone from challenging it who might want to, whether it be a teacher or a parent. And it's also an attempt to try to, you know, discourage or intimidate the court from challenging this. I mean, you can't tell me that if the court strikes down the student transfer provision that charter schools shouldn't still stay in place. I mean, I don't understand how anyone could defend this provision.
Ryan, I know that you've been talking with teachers. They see this as very mean-spirited and a retaliatory kind of measure.
Senator Palumbo, who introduced this amendment, said that Senator Trump, who was defending it, had provided a very polished defense for an unconscionable provision. Basically, when Senator Carmichael, President of the Senate, promised a 5% raise for teachers 1 month before an election, when many people thought that the teacher activism could actually lose Republicans lots of seats. When he made that promise, he didn't say that there would be all these other things in this bill. When the bill was revealed on Thursday, and it not only had raises in it and other things that teachers liked, like tax credits for buying supplies, but it also decreased their seniority protections for longer tenured workers and made it harder to strike. When all that was in there, not only was that, you know, bundling their pay raises with a bunch of other stuff they didn't like, but even if the bill passes with this non-severability clause and someone challenges in court something that they don't like, charter schools, the vouchers, if they succeed in court in actually knocking down one of those provisions they don't like, that cancels the pay raises, that cancels the 400 new school support personnel, like counselors and social workers that would go into schools. So it limits the plaintiff's ability in any upcoming court case to shoot down provisions of this without also endangering a lot of things that teachers see as good for the school system.
And one of the things that have been questioned already in terms of potentially being overthrown is the one issue, mandate that a bill has to be one issued, and it's been argued that, you know, charter schools and being able to take your leave and save your leave and put it towards retirement, these are two very separate things.
Yeah, this bill deals with separate sections of state law, and the argument coming into this from the teachers unions was it's unconstitutional because it doesn't address a single subject. So the unions made that argument that this bill may be unconstitutional, and then you see this non-severability clause appear.
Mm-hmm. They're going back in.
This is indicating
They're going back
Luckily,
in.
Luckily, it's not a fire alarm like we experienced a couple of days ago.
We had that earlier this week as well. All right. The second amendment that they got to today was offered by Senator Plimel of Cabell County. Excuse me, and that would have stricken the charter schools component of the bill. So let's go ahead and listen to a little bit of that debate.
I have received numerous calls and numerous emails on this bill. I have received one in favor of it, and over 1,000, maybe 2,000, 3,000 of calls, emails, and my staff, you know, my secretary takes notes of these. They keep track of it, so I get a daily update on it. And those are the ones that are against. This needs to be done, if it's done, in a very collaborative model, not in to be blown through in about 3 or 4 weeks of the session. And I urge the adoption of the amendment.
If this was the good thing to do, why would we not want to give it to every student in the state? Why would we want to divide and separate our children and our teachers for something for a select few? Thank you for your time.
Senator can answer the question.
Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity to answer that. I have to say that this is a permissive ability and a tool. There is nothing precluding every public school if they chose to become a charter school. Thank you.
Would you agree that we're creating sort of an atmosphere in West Virginia of confusion and anxiety for teachers, for parents?
Give her a moment to answer the question.
I will tell you that it is unfortunate that there is so much confusion and anxiety, but I do believe that some of it has been because of misinformation that has been said, and I cannot stop somebody's free speech rights to say whatever they feel they need to say. That is their right. I can only do my very best to educate and to tell folks what the truth is. And I have met with those that have come to me and asked if they could get an explanation, and I have talked to them. And like I said, once I go over the different components and what it actually is, I'm able to alleviate a lot of their fears.
Well, my constituents come to me with a lot of harebrained ideas too, but you know, I don't parlay that into writing legislation. I guess what I'm getting at is, with all this confusion and anxiety, it's not just the education community. Obviously, it's the people in West Virginia. Why wouldn't we step back, get the governor, get him on board? If you think this is a great idea, which you know, it may have some merit. Why not get the governor to convene a blue ribbon commission on public education, go around the states, get testimony from parents, from students, and things of this sort. Come back in here next year with a bill that we can all agree on, or at least let the public know that, you know, we're sincere about creating an atmosphere of quality education. Why do we continue to have people have all this angst? I mean, it's not doing us any good. Our emails are off the charts. I think you need to step back and take a look at this. I hope you would agree with me.
Is there a question? No,
I did. Ask her if she agreed with me.
Oh.
And that was just a small, small bit of what went on for a couple of hours on the charter schools amendment. And we wanted to jump back and say that the non-severability clause, that amendment to do away with that clause, that failed, 16 to 18, with two Republicans siding with the amendment to strike. And that is Senator Hamilton and Senator Mann.
You're hearing a lot of 16 to 18.
Yes, 16
there
to 18.
There are 14 Democrats in the Senate, mm-hmm. and Hamilton and Mann have tended to side with the Democrats during all of these votes.
Hamilton, one of the person who beat Robert Carnes, who was one of the biggest enemies of teachers during the strike.
That was some of the emotional questioning going back and forth, but it got very technical, of course. And Ryan, I'm hoping that you can help us with some of the descriptors. Now, there's an authorizer, there's the Charter School Commission, there's the authority, or maybe limited authority, unknown authority of the school board, the state school board. Can you talk about the line of questioning that we heard and the concerns brought out in terms of the authority bodies with the charter schools, over charter schools?
Well, you mentioned the one object rule of the bill as being a constitutional concern of this bill. Another one is the power of the State Board of Education, which is often referred to as the fourth branch of government here in West Virginia, because it has constitutional authority apart from the legislature and often above the legislature in the realm of education to regulate education here. And these charter schools are free from a lot of these regulations that the state school board otherwise imposes upon public schools. There's the Public Charter School Commission that would be created within this bill. It would be able to create charter schools. Basically, they would have to be presented with an application for to create a charter school, but it could authorize charter schools to exist in low-performing counties. Now, there's not a definition described in the legislation for low-performing counties. I think a lot of people would argue that most counties in West Virginia are low-performing in education, according to various rankings. But the commission can also tell other entities that are authorizers under this bill, like county school boards and colleges, that if they're presented with an application and shoot down the creation of a charter wherever they are, those applicants can then appeal above the county school board that doesn't want the charter in their county, above the college, to the commission level, and the commission can say, no, you've got to put that charter school in your county.
And what is the Democratic caucus? What are they arguing against that?
The Senator Unger has argued, again, the constitutionality of this is questionable. You saw Senator Facemeyer there talking about how he felt that this would be an exclusionary provision, allowing only so many kids to go to charter schools. But of course, I think a lot of Democrats don't want any charter schools. And it's those sorts of arguments, along with perhaps the biggest one shared by teachers, which is we don't want more money taken away from our public schools to fund something that we really don't consider to be public schools, charter schools, which could be run by governing boards that aren't elected and that can also hire private companies to run their day-to-day operations.
Brad, we also heard the argument that these schools, the charter schools, are more tailored, are more likely filled by kids of privilege, and that it the fact that the way the this bill sets things up is that the parents would have to come and enroll their children into these schools. Talk about that concern and some of the, you know, some of the assurances that Senator Rucker may have been able to offer there.
Yeah, that line of questioning came from Senator Richard Lindsay, a Democrat from Kanawha County, and he was asking, what are the requirements to accept low-income children, at-risk children? And Senator Rucker said, well, it's open enrollment, so anyone could enroll. She said that charter schools could set up their own internal list of goals, of things they want to accomplish by providing by having provisions for lower income students or at-risk students, but then the Democrats came back and said, but look, the public schools have to take anyone. You know, you're setting up a situation where the charter schools could very well be exclusionary, just even if it's an accident.
And Senator Baldwin pointed out that the bill does not mandate transportation. And that's another main issue for getting a cross section of kids. Not all parents have transportation. In the rural areas, more low income, the public school bus system is the way kids get to school.
Again, Senator Rucker said that each charter school could be set up to require transportation for students, but that they have the option. The question was based on more broadly what West Virginia is like. A lot of kids depend on buses to get to school, a lot of long bus rides already, and a lot of parents who don't have the flexibility in their lives to get a kid to and from school every day.
And again, it was back and forth for probably a good 2 hours on that amendment alone. It went down 16-18. Ryan, talk to us about the third amendment that was presented this afternoon. That was on the ESAs, the educational savings accounts. What are those, and what is the objection to setting those up?
Education savings accounts are a type of voucher for parents to receive public money to educate their kids outside of the public school system. There's a ban on kids who receive ESAs from being full-time public schoolers. So they'd get $3,200 to be able to send their kid to private school, pay for online courses, homeschool them with textbooks that they can purchase with that $3,200. There's all sorts of things they could spend it on. And even at the end of the list in the bill that says you can spend it on XYZ, it says anything else approved by the treasurer. And so the argument against this is there's only five existing in other states. People don't have a lot of research on this relatively new type of school choice program. Feel that this is not going to solve any real educational issues, and it's going to continue to take kids away from the public school system into some sort of separate system while wasting money on something that doesn't have proven educational benefits.
Senator Weld stood up, and not necessarily under this amendment, but he did. He stood up in defense of the charter schools earlier, and he pointed out that 44 other states have charter schools, and that California 1,200 schools, and many of them are successful, and offer a choice.
You know, and it's become clear to me the last couple of days, we're not talking about that many in West Virginia. There was a question, we'll give us an example of a rural state that has them. A couple of days ago, the answer was Alabama, which has a couple. Today, under questioning, Senator Rucker said maybe up to five in West Virginia. So really not talking about a lot of charter schools. So on the one hand, not that many, what's the big deal? On the other hand, not that many, so is it worth doing?
And again, with the with Amendment 3, the educational savings accounts, that amendment also failed. Okay, and so in 16 to 18. In the moment we have left, where does it go from here? And once, you know, assuming it gets out 16 to 18, will the House receive it? What's your sense?
Well, I mean, we just had earlier today, there was the state teachers unions and the school service personnel union said that they are collecting ballots on a possible statewide action, which could be something as much as a strike. So we don't know if that kind of pressure is going to stop the House from taking it up. But I've heard that there's not a lot of support from some delegates. I hear there is support from others. I don't know, but it's up for final passage in the Senate on Monday, and I do expect that vote to go through.
Great change. It changes quite a bit in the House.
All right. Thank you both so much. We'll have to wrap up now. Ryan Quinn from the Charleston Gazette-Mail, Brad McElhenney from West Virginia Metro News.
Thank
guys,
you.
Thank you so
thank
much.
You. Thank you.
And this concludes this week's coverage of the legislative action here. I'm Suzanne Higgins. For everyone here at West Virginia Public Broadcasting, thanks for joining us. Have a great weekend.